Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie, a mom to a Mito fighter. On our podcast, Energy in Action, we talk all things Mito, and I'm glad you're here to learn and to be part of our community. Hi, Sarah Kate. Welcome to our episode of Energy in Action. I'm so excited to hear your story today. Why don't you go ahead and let our listeners know how you are connected to the Mito world?
Hi, Stephanie. Thank you so much for having me. My path to a mitochondrial disease diagnosis was, like a lot of patients, it was not a straight line at all, lots of zigzags. And growing up, there were some small things, like when I was little, that in hindsight were like, that's kind of weird, but nothing that like in the time period that we were like, oh, this is a sick child. I was very, very flexible, which now we realize I've been diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos. And like I had some like GI issues, but very minor. However, when I was like 12 years old, I came home from horseback riding camp, like really, really sick, high fever. I ended up like with a staph infection in my throat, and I was sick for months. It was the weirdest thing that we'd ever encountered with me. And just, I would end up in the ER with extreme dehydration, that when I couldn't stop, like, it wasn't cyclic vomiting, like I never threw up, but it was just like, was very, very sick over and over again that year. I ended up in the ER and high inflammation markers. And my doctor was just like, we have no idea what this means. This is really, really weird. And it kind of calmed down. I went back to school. I went back to like my dance classes, but we didn't really know how to explain it. And then the following year in dance class, I sprained my ankle, and it was like within 24 hours, it was very clear that something was wrong. Like, it hurt to even touch it to the floor. I was like, my foot was changing crazy colors and temperatures. And I was very blessed. I got a diagnosis like within the week of reflex sympathetic dystrophy, complex regional pain syndrome, from just like my family physician. It was a physician's assistant. She was very intelligent. And honestly, I thank God for her, because I know so many people can go their whole lives even not knowing what's wrong with them whenever they have RSD, because it's very weird. Like, you know, the pain is just so outrageous, so much worse than it should be with that type of injury. And that's not always well received. So it saved me and my family a lot of heartache trying to figure out what was going on. And I got to a pediatric pain management doctor, and once again, I was quite blessed. It took a while, but I'm walking again. Like, that was when I was 13, and I'm very, very blessed. Like, my legs work, but it wasn't long after that, like, the GI symptoms just went absolutely crazy. And at first it was diagnosed as just RSD gone to my stomach. And I really struggled like all through high school. It was so difficult to eat. And finally, when I was, I want to say 19 years old, just from Dr. Google, I learned about like gastroparesis and digestive tract paralysis. So I thought, you know, that kind of sounds like me. Let me see, who should I go to learn more about this? So I went out to a gastric motility doctor in Pennsylvania, and sure enough, like, did gastric emptying studies, did the whole gamut of testing, and it was quite markedly severe gastroparesis, to the point that when I had to have an x-ray done 3 months later, the isotope was still in my system. So, because we were going to place a feeding tube, but then when they saw that was still in my system, they were like, we don't think that's going to help you to do a feeding tube. So I've actually been on TPN, IV nutrition, since then. So I'm going on, I've been on TPN for 11 years. And once again, knock on wood, very blessed. That can be really, really difficult on your body. And especially considering some of the diagnoses I have, it's shocking that it's gone as well as it has. But that year was just probably the worst year of my life. Age 19 through age 20, I lost the use of one of my arms, I woke up from a procedure and I was paralyzed for like a month. And I say paralyzed, I don't want to sound like I don't understand paralysis. It was, you know, like periodic paralysis type thing, where it was temporary, thankfully. But basically, my arm never fully recovered from that. And that year, we spent definitely more time away from home than at home. My doctor was in Chicago. We lived in a Ronald McDonald House there for months. And then she moved to Florida and we had to follow her because there was nobody who knew how to take care of me. So we were at a Ronald McDonald House in Orlando for months there as well. And while I was there, I got very, very sick. The really, really high fevers, high inflammation markers, and they had no clue what was going on. Like 2 weeks of like 104, 105 fever and just crazy inflammation markers, so sick that we didn't know if I was going to make it and nobody knew what was happening. Thankfully, my mom was there. She was my advocate and she happened to hear like one of the residents say how low my hemoglobin was. And that was an experience we had never had. We never had any hematologic issues before. And so that was, it kind of like raised up a flag in my mom's mind. And the doctor was basically ready to discharge me because they didn't know what was going on. They basically were like, well, it's not sepsis, so I guess you can go. But nothing was resolved. I still had 105 fever. And thankfully, my mom had heard what they said about hemoglobin. So she said, could we call in a hematologist? And thankfully, they sent in a pediatric hematologist. And she knew exactly what was going on. She thought I had something called hemophagocytic lymphohistiocytosis. And she said, you're not going anywhere. You need blood. My hemoglobin was at 6. And so I got blood. They did a bone marrow biopsy, which it kind of like took us down a wrong path because it didn't show the hemophagocytic lymphohistiocytosis. But a couple months later, we went to a doctor at Johns Hopkins and he definitely saved my life because he looked at the bone marrow biopsy and saw that they only got cartilage. So of course it didn't show the HLH. And he was pretty sure that's what was going on. And sure enough, I flared again a couple weeks later and they caught it on the bone marrow biopsy that time. And I just am so, so thankful that the right doctors came in. It's a rare pediatric condition. So nobody in the adult world was able to recognize what it was. And basically, that was just like the craziest year. And finally, you know, whenever that much is going on, it's like, what could tie all of this together? What can tie this pain condition over here, digestive tract paralysis over here, and this rare pediatric hematologic condition over here? And that's basically what led us to Mito. And I don't have a known mito mutation, I'll say that. But they say whenever you have like, what, 4 or more bodily systems that are impacted that you start to think mitochondrial disease and you should check that out. And so that's what we did. We checked it out and I don't have a known mutation, but some of the mito doctors, they think that it's very likely involved in some form. They don't know if it's primary, secondary. We don't know. But that's what led us here and to the looking for a genetic cause for all of these varying issues.
Wow. So how do they treat the HLH?
It is really difficult to treat, actually. And so typically, most of the time, it's found in really young children, oftentimes even little babies, and it varies. There is a main protocol. HLH technically is not curable, they say. So there's a center for HLH. It's the Cincinnati Children's Hospital HLH Center of Excellence. And the doctor I saw there said that HLH really isn't curable except for with the bone marrow transplant. And so basically, they'll do like really high dose steroids usually to try to get it to calm down. And then a lot of the time it'll require like chemo and then even a bone marrow transplant. My body was in really, really bad shape when my HLH started and we tried an alternative medication called Anakinra. And at the time it calmed things down and it has like my HLH has flared since then and it's always at the back of my mind. They don't want to put me through a bone marrow transplant until we have absolutely no choice because they basically have thought that whenever I'm at my worst with HLH, they don't know that I would survive a bone marrow transplant. So I'm once again very blessed that we have found like alternative ways to calm it down. We're really, really careful with watching my blood counts. We check them every week. Whenever it gets too low, we go in for blood because that's kind of one of my red flags. Whenever my hemoglobin drops, we keep a close eye on inflammation marker called ferritin, because whenever my HLH has flared, it gets up to like really, really, really high. Like there's a certain mark where once you hit that point, it's almost exclusively HLH. And it's kind of interesting because whenever you get your sickest with HLH, your body goes into something called a cytokine storm, where basically your body, your blood cells are attacking your body, your organs. Like, so it would go after like my liver. One time, I'm on 24-hour TPN because I require TPN for my digestive tract paralysis. And during an HLH flare, it went and it impacted my adrenal system, that my pituitary gland doesn't produce cortisol. So I be supplemented with a low-dose steroid for cortisol and have to be on the TPN 24 hours a day. So basically, it goes after your organs. And so we're very careful. We try to protect me, and it impacts my immune system. And like with this whole COVID situation, the sickest, like some of the sickest COVID patients are also going into cytokine storms, which is really weird that it kind of, so we really don't want to find out what would happen if we mixed HLH with that. And so, yeah, basically, yeah, we're really, really careful because we do not want to have to find out what would happen. And if my HLH, basically, whenever my HLH flares again, we never know what it's going to do this time, how it could impact my body. And are we going to get it calmed down the way we have in the past? So sometimes for a lot of people, it's not always just triggered by an infection or something. It can just do it whenever it wants, but we don't want to give it any reason to flare.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't even think about the whole COVID connection or complication that could happen.
Right. Yeah. My doctor is highly cautioning me to just be very, very, very careful.
Oh, I'm sure. So how did you get to be this amazing author of children's books? And tell us about your wonderful doodle, Alice Eloise, because I've read your book now a few times and it's just so delightful. I'm so excited for you to tell everybody this story.
Oh, well, thank you. That's so kind of you to say. I think that there's one thing that everybody who knows me knows about me. It's that I love dogs. Like when I was little, I told my parents I was going to be a dog until they got me one. My sister's allergic to dogs, so we didn't have one when I was little. And so it was like this big problem where your oldest daughter is allergic to dogs and your youngest daughter is barking at the door because she wants a dog so bad. It's like, what do we do? So people know I love dogs. And long story short, thankfully, hypoallergenic dogs work for my sister and they got me a dog. I stopped barking. And so whenever I became disabled, whenever I lost the use of that first arm, and then since then, my other arm was impacted as well. But after that first arm, you know, it kind of like occurred to me, I wonder like what a service dog could do to help me. And so I did a lot of research and ultimately ended up getting my sweet double doodle, Alice Eloise. And we are a self-trained service dog team. And for us, that's really risky, to be honest. People ask me if I recommend going that route. And it's like, honestly, I can't tell you one way or another because it all depends on the dog. It depends on your lifestyle. Yeah, it was a really weird time in my life because I was actually sick, but I'm quite persistent and dedicated. So yeah, it took Alice's great temperament and us working every day until she was 2 to just like really teach her what it is to be a service dog. That being said, as incredible as she is as a service dog, you know, she's knows the retrieval-based tasks. That's her biggest thing for me since my arms don't work very well. And also when we're out and about, the biggest thing, she heals right by my side so that nobody bumps into me, because with my RSD, that's really painful. And yeah, can really kind of even ruin a day for me if my pain gets too bad. So those are the things that she does for me. That being said, her personality is, she's as sweet as can be. God love her. She's also just like so remarkably silly and perky, and she loves people, loves people. That was the hardest thing teaching her to be a service dog, because a service dog has to know how to keep it together when you're out and, you know, focus on their job. And so how do you train this like silly people loving dog to be a service dog? And we've found that really great balance where I didn't want to like stop her from being her because she is really special, as lovable as a dog can be. And I didn't want to stifle that in her. So yeah, we found a really nice balance where she gets to live her life and be her sweet, silly, lovable self. But she also gets to be my service dog. And I get a best friend who is with me at all times, helping me. And yeah, she's really the best thing that's happened to me. She's like my brightest silver lining through being sick. And so silver linings has kind of become a mission for me. I have this memory. It was before I got Alice Eloise, but I think I was probably about 16. I was standing out on my driveway and I thought, I've always loved to write. I thought someday I'm going to write a book and it's going to be about silver linings, about looking on the bright side. And there's going to be a girl and a dog on the cover. Didn't know anything else. That was all I knew. And then years later, along comes this spunky, adorable red double doodle, Alice Eloise, who stole my heart the first time I saw her. And she, like I said, she's the brightest silver lining that's come to me through all of this. And it just became abundantly clear that we have a story to tell. And so that's what we're doing. We're telling our story. And a weird succession of events led to this. Like, she was once on the Daily Puppy website, and an artist out in Washington reached out to me like, hey, can I use her as my doodle model? We made this really strong connection. Her grandson actually has HLH as well, which is very rare. And she actually like helped me kind of get the ball rolling, like with actually pursuing writing this kid's book. And so I wrote the book. Then I got sick again. My HLH flared and everything kind of got put on the back burner. But it was always there in the back of my mind. And last year, it was like right whenever things locked down, things like kind of fell into place. I found a way to learn everything I needed to know. I found my illustrator. And let's just say creating my first book has kept me sane through COVID. I'm a people person. I really struggle not being around people. And I've really just immersed myself in a lot of classes and just calls with my illustrator. He's in the Philippines. So like, it'll be like nighttime here and morning there, and I'll hear his rooster crowing. And like, it's kept me sane creating this book, this beautiful book. It's my passion project. And our first book is our life story. It's how Alice Eloise, it's all from her perspective. It's telling the story from a silly puppy's eyes. Like, I don't know. It basically starts out, she doesn't know what a service dog is, but she knows that she wants to be best friends with this girl who walks into her life. And if it takes becoming a service dog, that's what she's going to do. She's going to be a service dog. And yeah, there's a lot of lessons. The biggest lesson is just that no matter what you're going through, it's important to remember to look for silver linings, that it's not always easy. It's not always immediately apparent what those silver linings are, but if you don't give up, if you keep trying, if you just keep going, that you will find reasons to smile. You will find beauty in the world if you just keep going. And that's our mission.
I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. That's our mission. And I've found that time and time again in my own illness. And that's really seen me through so many hard times. I never want to come off as a Pollyanna that's just like, oh, just don't give up. It's there. Because I understand there are some really, really bad situations in the world where it's really hard to see those things. You're not going to necessarily feel it in that moment, but I truly do believe that if you just keep going, that there is always going to be something there that is going to just bring you joy, bring joy to others through you, that we all have a reason that we're here and just keep going.
I recently heard a presentation on just that topic, and the presenter said, if you just can give 1% more than the day before, that's an improvement. And then you think about it, it's like, I can do 1% more.
Yeah.
And you're right. Just keep putting that next foot forward and don't give up, but you can't sugarcoat it. You are right. This disease and everything that you've been through is definitely something that can't be sugarcoated. So I love how you've taken the life of a person with such a complicated medical background and sort of woven the dog's perspective through it. And your book is absolutely delightful. Your illustrator is just amazing. Just, I was blown away by the illustrations. And then when I got to actually see Alice Eloise, I was like, wow, really captured the dog within a childlike, I don't want to call it cartoon, but definitely like a caricature of her. Just beautifully done.
Yeah, he does an absolutely amazing job. And I didn't know what I wanted, but I also knew it when I saw it. Like, I got samples from a number of illustrators, and I just kept hoping that I was going to, when I saw it, that I would know it. And whenever I met Kit and I saw what he could do with our story, I was like, oh, yes, this is it. And yeah, he's been such a blessing to us. And as we're working on our second book, we have, like, we'll be on Zoom a couple hours, a few times a week, and just, it's really cool. This second book, I'm actually watching the process of how he does it. And he has a very unique process, and he's a wonderful person too. So such a blessing.
Can you tell our audience just a little bit about the premise of what the second book's going to be about?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Alice Eloise just walked in. Sorry. Oh. I was looking at her. Yes, absolutely. I can tell you what our second book is going to be about. It's a bit of a sneak peek because we haven't even announced it to our own audience yet, our own readers. We're hoping to do that in the next few days as we work on our first full illustration. It's about a trip to the zoo with my service dog, Alice Eloise, and me. And so I'm from the St. Louis area, and I love dogs. I love animals in general. And going to our zoo, it's a really beautiful place, especially in the past, since I was little, it's just grown by leaps and bounds. We have beautiful animals. It's just a beautiful place. And Alice always loves going to the zoo with me. It's really quite an experience going to the zoo with a service dog. The animals are used to seeing people. They see people staring at them all day, every day. But whenever a dog wanders up, they're kind of like, what is this? And so I want to say we do. We have to be respectful of that this is their home. And if any of the animals don't like seeing Alice, we move along. But some of the animals just love seeing her, like the polar bear. His name is Coley, and he loves her. Grizzly bears, sea lions have a love-hate relationship with her. One really didn't like her, but the rest loved her. So it's quite an experience. The monkeys all stop and stare. So, we'll literally have people following us at the zoo just to see. it's quite an experience. Alice loves it, too. And so it actually started out that it was just going to be a scene in the first book, but we ended up deciding to end the first book at the end of her service dog test. And then I was like, well, you know what? I guess I'm going to write another book because I need to talk a little bit about Alice Eloise going to the zoo. And I'm so glad that happened because it really inspired me to add more to our story. I didn't know where I was going with it aside from just a trip to the zoo. I felt like I needed to have an underlying message also. I didn't want it to just be another zoo book. So the premise of this one is Alice Eloise at the zoo and being somebody else's silver lining, not just looking for a silver lining yourself, but knowing that some of the best silver linings in life are the people around us, our interactions with one another. And with that in mind, knowing that you have the power to be somebody else's silver lining, that you can make somebody's cloudy day brighter. So she goes through a day at the zoo encountering people. And whenever she sees somebody going through a difficult experience, she steps in and is determined to be their silver lining. And so it's just kind of a bit of a roller coaster of emotions from, quite small things to even to bigger issues. And it's really, I didn't know where I was going with it, but I fell in love with it as I wrote it and as we're illustrating it. I love it just as much as the first, and I didn't know that was possible. So I'm so, so, so excited to get to share it with people.
I can't wait for that to be published. It sounds wonderful. And you're right. Sometimes the best silver lining is the lining you provide that you didn't know you were going to provide. And I'm sure her interactions with the animals were just a unexpected delight for so many of the zoo goers to watch that transpire as well.
Yeah. And for my illustrator, I was so excited to see what he would do with it. And we're working on it now. And yeah, the way he's animating their interactions is just an absolute delight and everything I hoped it would be.
Oh, good. I can't wait. Well, I have to tell our listeners, though, too, that right now Sarah-Kate is wearing a shirt that says More Disney, More Dogs. And if that doesn't completely illustrate her love for dogs, I don't know what could, because we briefly spoke before we started recording about we both have this zest for dogs in our life. And Alice is joining her on her end, and my dog Oliver is on my end. And I think the two would be pretty good friends. Oliver is a Bichon doodle. Aww. So he's a little tiny mix of your version of a doodle. So I think they would be fun. And I think some way we should figure out a way how to have a doodly doo party.
Absolutely. Alice would love it. She's so funny with other dogs. She just wants them to like her so bad. She wants to be friends. Play. Yeah. She's very special. And yeah, two of the things people know about me, I love dogs. I love Disney. Like, one of our favorite adventures we've gone on is we went to Disney World right before COVID. We went at the end of 2019, and it was so, so fun Alice Eloise is actually, her name is perfect. I didn't plan this, but when I was in Florida for medical treatment, I spent a lot of time like at the Disney Springs shopping area, and there was like a lot of Alice in Wonderland stuff. So her name was actually inspired by Alice in Wonderland, which is a children's book, of course. And then her middle name, Eloise, it wasn't inspired by the Eloise books, but it's really funny that her names, Alice and Eloise, are both kidlit names. Like, mm-hmm. I guess she's destined to be a children's book star. So who knew? I didn't, but it's just one of those funny little coincidences that happen in life sometimes.
The universe knew, that's for sure. Well, thank you so much, Sarah-Kate, for joining us. I have just loved our interview today. I can't wait to see your next book's drop. I hope you keep us informed on that so we can make sure all of our listeners know to look for your latest publication. And do you want to remind our listeners your website where they can go out and keep track of you and read your blog and stay up to date on Alice Eloise?
Yeah, my blog is called Sarah-Kate's Silver Linings, and I've blogged about my journey with chronic illness, and I think I've been doing it for almost 10 years now. And so you can find us at Sarah-Kate's Silver Linings. AliceEloise.com also links to it. That's the book side of our website. So you can find us either way, and it all joins up on the same website. That's where we tell our story and where all the latest on whatever's going on with me and my crazy medical journey, which I'm sure a lot of your listeners can unfortunately relate to. We love making friends, and we are always just so, so delighted. Anybody who finds us, feel free to reach out. We both Alice Eloise and I love making friends all the time. So
thanks for being so generous with your time and just your openness about it, because you're right. Being in the rare disease world can be very isolating, and your blog is just a delight to read. You have a very, very great sense of word style that I appreciated. Thanks again for joining us. I appreciated it, and I hope to hear from you soon.
Absolutely. Stay in touch. Thank you so much for the invite. It's been such a joy.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning into this week's episode of Energy in Action. Remember to give us a 5-star rating on your listening app. This helps to boost us up the charts and makes it easier for others to find us. And remember, you can find all of the information referenced either in the show notes or over at mitoaction.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great week.